Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us for the second part of the show today is Dr. Paul Anastas, a professor in the practice of chemistry for the environment at Yale University. Paul, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I think we're going to start with the obvious first question, which is, what is green chemistry?
Well, it's a great question because, you know, when most people hear the word chemical, the first thing they think of is toxic. And yet, green chemistry recognizes that everything is a chemical. Everything that we see, touch, and feel is a chemical. And so when we start thinking about if we want to change to a sustainable world, then we really need to think about it at the basic level, the molecular level. So green chemistry is nothing more than saying we can design the products and the processes of our society and our economy so that they're not toxic, not depleting, not degrading, and we can do that by design. And that's what green chemistry is all about.
So its corollary, then, is what is not green chemistry?
What's not green chemistry is the way that we've been doing it for 200 years.
Wow.
So okay. Chemistry has given absolute miracles, technological miracles, in terms of making new materials. I mean, things that are essential to the way that we travel, computation, communication, medicine, the way that we are able to build our buildings and on and on. But we've done it in a way that is half of a job. So the one half is making something that's functional and performs well. The other half of the job is making sure that it doesn't cause harm to the environment or to people. And so we've been very good at the first half. And basically, up until recently, we haven't even paid attention to the second half. Green chemistry is a change in that thinking and focusing on performance as being functional and not harmful.
So you serve as the director of the Center for Green Chemistry and Green Engineering at Yale University. What is the focus of your center? What areas of green chemistry are you researching now?
Well, we're lucky to have quite a network of faculty associated with the center. And so we cover everything from new ways of generating renewable energy and storing renewable energy, new ways of ensuring that water is purified in a sustainable way. We have something called the Molecular Design Research Network that makes sure that from the beginning, molecules and materials are designed so that they can't be toxic. And we do a lot with using natural products, things like wood and algae, to turn them into valuable materials, valuable chemicals, valuable ingredients, so that you have this integrated biorefinery, so that the bioeconomy can actually become real and help our movement away from petrochemicals.
Right, because I'm thinking of, say, pesticides, the family of pesticides that are out there. There are those that are kind of have a natural molecular base to them, nature's types of pesticides. And then there are those that are synthetically generated, man-made generated. So green chemistry, I guess, is using pesticides or using pest prohibitors that are made by nature, let's say, versus those that are made in the lab?
It's, it's inspired by nature.
Right.
I mean, one of the things that we see, it's the most powerful tool in the green chemistry toolbox, is looking out how nature accomplishes different tasks.
Mm-hmm.
So there are natural pesticides. Anything that ends in side, it means that it's going to be toxic. But nature is so much more elegant about things, where it targets specific pests in specific ways rather than these broad spectrum synthetic pesticides that have marked the history of traditional chemical pesticides. So yes, green chemistry uses the lessons and basically the design handbook from nature and makes sure that if you're trying to accomplish that particular function for agricultural purposes, then it's done in a way that doesn't harm beneficial insects and the ecosystems that we all depend on.
But thinking that through, I guess that the, without getting too deep into the pesticide history, I guess one of the reasons we started developing synthetic pesticides because we discovered that we can perhaps manufacture a molecule that was more more efficient, that was more virulent, let's say, against certain pests, and it provided more opportunity to grow more crops or et cetera. Is that the line of thinking as to why we went down that road?
Yes, you have brought up the tragic history of, I think we'd all recognize of industrialization generally, focusing on efficiency rather than effectiveness. So yes, doing something efficiently is only good if you're doing a good thing, right? Efficiency is value neutral. You don't want a very bad thing done efficiently. Mm. And so this singular focus on efficiency, whether it's with pesticides or other types of functions, can wind up having you do the right things and do them wrong. So in this case, you want to grow more crops, but doing it in a way that's going to have you using pesticides that are toxic, persistent, contaminate our soil and our water. That's not something that you want to do efficiently. You want to effectively deal with pests and be able to grow more crops and more food.
And avoid those unintended consequences down the line. Like you say, that green chemistry tries to limit the amount of waste, hazardous and otherwise, that's produced.
Well, yes, but it's not just the waste. You're 100% correct that green chemistry, you know, minimizes waste and tries to really design out the concept of waste. But it's not just the waste part of the life cycle. It really is looking all the way through from the materials that you start with, your basic feedstocks, through your manufacturing processes, your use phase, all the way through the end of life. All of these can be affected by thoughtful design and thoughtful green chemistry, and they are.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. Paul Anastas, a professor in the practice of chemistry for the environment at Yale University and the director of Yale's Center for Green Chemistry. So I have to ask, I think another sort of category of chemicals that we're all thinking a lot about right now are home cleaning chemicals. Mm. Is green chemistry active in this area?
Mm. Oh, extremely. It's one of the most interesting, fun areas and important areas that green chemistry is focused on. So when you think about cleaning products, they have this whole life cycle of, the feedstocks that they're built from and the way that they're manufactured, but their use phase is usually only a few seconds, right? A minute until it goes down the drain or goes out into the environment. And so it's extremely important how you design them. So green chemistry is focusing on how do you get, again, that cleaning performance without all of the persistence and toxicity. One of my favorites is a collection of products out of made out of Oregon. It's called Defunkify, and I'd encourage people to look it up because it really is. It's very cool, very effective, and uses the principles of green chemistry.
And it's not chlorine based, which seems to be our go-to compound these days.
Chlorine does have quite a history, and the short answer is no, it is not. It is very, very thoughtfully designed through the 12 principles of green chemistry. And, there's there's other companies, one that we've spun out of Yale that is right here in Connecticut called P2 Science. And that looks at different types of ingredients, everything from fragrances and flavors. And they pride themselves on getting everything from, they say, the forest and the field. So, you know, natural bio-based building blocks to come up with their products. It's so there's a lot of innovation. And that's the key point about green chemistry. It's not about not doing chemistry. It's about doing better chemistry. Mm. And it really is all about what you can do, what you can invent, what you can innovate, rather than, you know, doing less, expecting less, just simply minimizing.
So when you talk a little bit about like fragrance and flavor and some of these other innovations, are these technologies or chemistry techniques that large corporations are kind of signing on to or interested in at this point, or are these kind of more small boutique brands trying to promote a mission?
The good news is it's both. Now, I would say that some of the most innovative approaches are with some of these disruptive, small, innovative companies. Now, when you're a larger company doing things at huge scale, sometimes it's very difficult to disrupt yourself. Sometimes it's more possible to do things in a cleaner way, as we were talking about before, less waste, more efficiency, less pollution. And it would be difficult for me to name a major company that isn't thinking and doing things in green chemistry at this point. However, and this is a big however, I also couldn't name a company that is doing it systematically. So for every one chemical or manufacturing process that has been reinvented using green chemistry, there's probably 100 that have yet to be, you know, improved.
Are we seeing countries establishing regulations, standards, protocols that are pushing or aspiring to use or companies to employ more green chemistry?
Well, it's interesting because there are certainly many more regulations that are being put in place. And certainly the use of green chemistry makes these regulations, well, I'll say, irrelevant to the companies doing green chemistry, right? Because if you're banning chemicals that these companies, these green chemistry companies, would never use, then they don't have to worry about it. But green chemistry is not a regulatory strategy. It's an innovation strategy. So the more you use green chemistry, the less you suffer the whatever costs might be associated with regulatory barriers. It winds up giving you a competitive advantage. So what people are finding is you don't need to regulate in innovation if it's going to help people make more money. You know, people think I'm joking. They ask me, where did you come up with this term green chemistry all those many years ago? And I said, well, on the one hand, green conjures up images of the environment, but in the U.S., it's also the color of our money. So it's about how you make those things aligned so that you can actually wind up being more profitable by being more environmentally friendly and more conscious of human health.
Yeah, I like your, again, I've written down your term. I like nature-inspired chemistry. That's a little clunkier
Absolutely.
Term, but that's the term that now resonates with me. Because green can be such a co-opted term these days.
Yeah, back in the day, it wasn't as co-opted, but I hear what you're saying. And I have to just tip my hat to an author named Janine Benyus, who wrote a book called Biomimicry. I'd recommend it to all of your listeners, and really talks about how you take nature as a mentor and you know, inviting nature to the design table, because, as I said, it's one of the most powerful tools in the green chemistry toolbox.
So as you look at kind of this history of green chemistry and where it's headed, are you encouraged by the trajectory?
Oh, without question. So what I see happening not only across the U.S. and Europe, but every bit as much what's happening in India and China and in Asia, things that are happening in South America and Africa, that's emerging, is extremely encouraging. And one of the fairly large projects that we're involved with, the United Nations Industrial Development Organization, is the Global Green Chemistry Initiative. And that is spreading the word about green chemistry to emerging economies. And that's just extremely encouraging.
So what also needs to happen is that you need to have large ag firms and companies, the ADMs and the Monsantos and the BASFs of the world, also recognize the environmental and economic value of a nature-inspired chemistry world.
You're 100% right. And the good news is that, nothing happens as fast as I'd like because I'm a very impatient person. We are seeing those large companies and, quite frankly, iconic companies that are engaged in green chemistry. I mentioned P2 Science earlier. That is something that is engaging with strategic partners and making sure that this kind of thing is not just the exception to the rule, but gets integrated throughout our manufacturing processes on everything from cleaners to perfumes to the daily products that we use in society.
So up to this point, we really have been mostly talking about kind of those daily products we use, the practical chemicals, but I have to highlight one of the things you mentioned to me, which is that green chemistry is also now being applied to vodka, right? There's a vodka somehow created through a green chemistry process.
Yes, one of the star graduates from the Yale Center for Green Chemistry is a person named Dr. Stafford Sheehan, and he is one of the co-founders of distillery in Brooklyn called AIRCO. I'd encourage, it's AIRCO. AIRCO makes a brand of vodka that is not only delicious, but is the first carbon negative vodka. What does that mean? It means it actually uses carbon dioxide to make this delicious vodka, because as you probably know, many distilleries generate a lot of CO2, but this actually consumes it in the process. So I would highly recommend it.
Well, Chris, do you think something like this would help Park City meet its carbon net zero goals?
It is now in the mix.
And everything's on the table.
This is true. I heard from a doctor talking about the virus. He says, in a pinch, you can use unflavored vodka as a cleaning product,
right,
too.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because AIRCO, during the very beginnings of the crisis here in New York, of course, globally, they completely shifted their production to making and donating hand sanitizers, spray, and they delivered it to Mount Sinai Hospital. So it just goes to show you how much good green chemistry can do.
It also goes to show you that it doesn't take many valves to turn in a distillery to go from vodka to a cleaning product. So
our local distillery has done the same.
Yes.
That's right. But I will say the most important part of this, as delicious as the vodka may be, is showing that CO2 doesn't have to be a waste. Carbon dioxide doesn't need to be spewed into our environment. And there's ways of transforming it into a wide range of things, even something as elegant as luxury vodka.
Well, perfect.
We got to wrap up. But I want to get that name of that company again out of Oregon, Doctor.
Oh, Defunkify.
Defunkify. Thank you.
Defunkify. So if your hands are dirty and funky, you want to defunkify them.
Well, perfect.
The name says what it does. Okay.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to spread the story of green chemistry.
Well, we're so happy to have you on. Yes. And is there a website you would direct our listeners to?
Oh, you can always find us at Yale Green Chemistry. If you Google Yale Green Chemistry, we're easy to find.
Perfect. Well, that is Dr. Paul Anastas, a professor at Yale University, speaking with us about green chemistry. Thanks so much for joining us, Paul.
Thanks for having me. All the best.